Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, investigating the dead. From a very young age, Bill Cook had run-ins with the paranormal. Ghostly encounters involving a small ball randomly rolling across a room, to unexplained voices being heard late at night. Strange and bizarre experiences would find Bill in his formative years, like discovering a room in a new house filled with dismembered and disfigured dolls, long forgotten by the previous owner. All of this would lead him to question the existence of the supernatural and paranormal, eventually putting him on a quest to find answers to who and what may be haunting the world and environments we all share today.
Well, I guess it started when I was a child. We grew up in a house that was built in 1900, and I had 4 siblings. So on weekends and summer, you know, we'd stay up late playing cards and different games and stuff. And one night as we were sitting there in a circle playing cards in the floor, a ball rolls in from the other room, and nobody was in that room. So that was the first big spark that kind of was like, what just happened? You know, So I wanted to try to figure out, you know, where that came from, how it happened. And, you know, that kind of started the journey. And in the same house, as I was a teenager, I had a nephew that was 2 years old at the time. And we had a coat closet when you first walked in the front door. Antique mirrors, they were already spooky looking mirrors because the backing was starting to peel off a little bit, so the edges were, you know, just creepy looking because it was old. And he would always talk about the man in the mirror, and he would have conversations just looking at the mirror, talking to something, and it was very strange. So those were my first really 2 experiences that I had. That kind of started the journey of being interested in paranormal and trying to find out if there was, you know, something to the other side.
Sure. Tell me more about that house. I mean, I'm sure it's something that you look back upon and you had those experiences. And as an adult, you go, wow, I mean, wonder what was that? Why did I have those experiences there? Was there something about the house? Paint the picture of the house for us. What sort of history you know about it? And, you know, what, you know, if anything, sometimes you make these discoveries or you dig and you don't really find a whole hell of a lot. But what did you find? You know, because I'm sure you went down that path a little bit of what was the story of the house that you found?
Well, we actually lived about a block away, and my parents bought this house. And it was just an old house that was fairly large. Like I said, I had 4 siblings, so we needed a lot of room. And they bought this house, and myself and my siblings were all like, oh, geez, we're embarrassed because this house was ran down, and it was a 2-family at the time. Well, we bought it and converted it back into a 1-family. And, you know, so we didn't realize that we were going to fix it up before we moved into it. But we ended up renovating the house and did all the drywall and all kinds of work. And we found a whole bunch of creepy dolls in the basement. Some of them had their head shaved. Some of them were missing arms and legs. Some of them were hanging from the rafters. Very interesting experience, but I guess there was a strange gentleman that lived on the second floor of the house, because, you know, it was like a first floor apartment and a second floor apartment when it was split. And so I guess it was some of the stuff he had in the basement, and it was just really spooky and creepy, you know. The house, you know, after you moved in and got used to it, it wasn't as creepy as it was, you know, when you first saw how the house looked. But, you know, it was the type that had push button on off switches, you mm-hmm. know, like the old type. It just was like a little circle. You'd hit the top button for on and the bottom button for off.
Yep.
And the hallway going to the upstairs and the upstairs hallway actually had like a wainscoting the halfway up, but it was leather and it had like a print pressed into it. Very strange, you know, it was like something out of The Shining or something. You know, after we got in there and cleaned it up and did all the work to it, it was a very nice place to live. There were still some strange things that happened, you know. My brother and I would just be up late and stuff, and we would hear noises and some unexplained things. One night we were messing around looking into a picture frame, and we almost saw it, what we thought we saw, somebody looking back at us through the picture frame, which was pretty interesting. And of course we ran off to our rooms and hid under the blankets for the night.
And that's understandable. I mean, just the atmosphere of what you're describing, even if there was nothing going on, you could almost assume that children being children would almost, you know, have nightmares or conjure up the idea that something's going on just with an environment like that. I want to go back to the dolls in the basement for a moment, because that just sounds insane. <You know? laughs> I mean, it sounds, you know, like the beginning of, you know, every serial killer or movie or something, not even movie, but or factual account of what, you know, some people were doing, like BTK and things of that nature with the dolls. Obviously, this is prior to the days of Instagram and Facebook and social media and selling haunted dolls and creepy dolls and creepy dolls being a thing.
Right.
You know, keep in mind, I mean, that's an interesting perspective, because those of us over the age of 30 have a remembrance of the world where there wasn't a niche outlet that was acceptable for every bizarre, fucked up thing in the world
right.
as a marketable source of income. And now there's a marketable source of income if you're into making strange and creepy dolls. And you could totally do it. So anyone who's listening going, well, maybe they were just selling them on Instagram. No, that wasn't a thing. So I'm wondering, you know, that just, it's bizarre. You said that the gentleman who had the other apartment at the time or prior to you guys getting there was known as being kind of odd or
extended. It was just a strange guy. Like, you could tell just by the way that he lived, because there, you know, the second floor was his apartment. So one of the bedrooms had to be a kitchen, because they had a kitchen, but didn't even have like a stove in it. It just had a two burner, very old gas, like, you know, that you'd just sit your pot on it and the mm-hmm. gas comes through and you light it. So, you know, it was strange. There wasn't even a stove on the second floor. So, you know, I mean, that was just a other eerie thing, especially when you look in that room that ended up ultimately being my brother's room, which was the kitchen. It was just odd, you know, when you move into a place and you think, oh, well, this was used to be a kitchen. Now it's a bedroom, you know.
I'm wondering, you know, what were those dolls used for? Why were they, you know, dismembered and adjusted and shaved and all of that? I mean, obviously, this, I'm sure, are questions that ran through your mind. I don't know how many answers you ever got to that. But what, I mean, this is a personal question, but, or a personal, I guess, opinion question. But what have you gathered in your mind? What have you settled on for what the hell was going on with those dolls?
I'm guessing that the guy was probably like a garbage picker, you know, and maybe he went through people's garbage, and when he found the dolls, he just brought them home, is what I'm assuming. I don't know. I mean, that was the only, there was some old newspapers and stuff down there, but I'm just guessing he was a collector of dolls for some reason, you know. Just from what I could gather from the neighbors, the guy was just kind of strange, and he didn't really leave the house that often. So, you know, he must have just went out to grab some dolls and mm-hmm. come home, kept them in the basement. He had like a little workshop down there, you know. One of the sections was kind of walled off, and it was his area, I guess, to store things. And there was quite a few dolls down there.
Wow. I'm wondering, is he still around? Do you know? Did you? I'm not asking for his name on the air or anything like that. But did you ever do any research as to what his name was, or attempt to look him up to see if he still exists?
I did not. You know, I was like, I was probably about 13 at the time. Sure. I think maybe 12 or 13.
Trying to find that record would be nearly impossible. Probably.
Yeah, and this was the, you know, this you didn't think about people's names back then, you know.
Sure. When,
at that age.
Dennis Rader turned out who it was, and you were in Wichita. No, I'm kidding. No, wow. I mean, maybe, you know, nothing necessarily paranormal comes of that, but that's obviously a very unsettling discovery to make in a new home and then trying to feel comfortable. What were your parents' thoughts on not only the dolls, but overall the experiences that you and your siblings were having in the house?
You know, we didn't really even talk about those experiences until much later, probably like 15 years later.
Yeah.
I don't know if we were embarrassed to talk about it, or we just didn't think that they wouldn't believe us, or you know, think we're trying to pull a joke on them or something, you know? But yeah, we really didn't talk about it. I mean, I'm much more open to talking to my parents now about, you know, different things paranormal, because they like to see and hear the locations and things that we go to and sure. investigate, you know?
Sure.
And they call me and tell me different things that happen. Like, oh, I think I just saw a shadow person, mm-hmm. or the radio just turned on and nobody turned it on. You know, those kinds of things happen.
Are they still in the same house or are they somewhere?
No, they live in a different house now, okay. But my mom does have some strange activity that happens at her house.
So it sounds like they weren't, even 15 years later when you brought this up and you kind of talked about, hey, you know, when we were kids, these sort of things happened. What do you remember? They weren't dismissive.
No. I mean, they're very open to it now. And I think that they probably were. Maybe they knew something was going on, but because it was a new house and, of course, we're kids, they mm-hmm. they didn't want to draw too much attention to it, you know?
Sure. You know, they didn't want to be the parents of, hey, me and your father think we've been seeing dead people around the house. What do you guys think?
Right.
Right. Yeah, after you find the dolls.
I'm like that with my kids. We talk about it, you know.
So. And they'll be calling into a totally different podcast 20 years from now. Probably more of a therapeutic one. Going, Dad used to talk to us about dead people all the time.
Right.
How did that make you feel? So, well, very interesting to have a house like that and to have those experiences. Certainly something that would spark your interest. And, you know, obviously very formative years where even if, you know, you do move on from that as you get a bit older, it's still kind of an innate interest. It's something that's going to stick with you. And as you get older, may pop back up. And with you, it sounds like it did. As you did get older, like into your teenage years, 20-somethings and things like that, how did paranormal play a part in your life? Where did you begin to start to look at these things and these occurrences as, you know, a bit of a more serious level other than these were just creepy childhood stories?
Well, I, you know, again, when I was a teenager, we used to record things. We thought we were going to be famous rappers or singers or something. So we would record different things. So there was a couple times playing back the audio that I heard something that sounded creepy, you know, mm-hmm. and I didn't really think much of it then. I was like, boy, that's strange. So later on, as I got a little bit older and stuff, I ended up digging out the old boom box that I used to record things on. And started trying to record like EVP sessions. This was before EVPs, you know, it was even a word or, you know, an acronym. So yeah. I just was trying to record voices of, you know, spirits. And that's kind of where it first started developing, is just trying to record and hear, you know, speaking to a spirit.
What made you, because obviously, again, we got to put it into a time perspective here for everyone. EVP, the first recollection I have of hearing about the concept was probably in about 1988 on Unsolved Mysteries. And I believe it was the Queen Mary episode where they recorded unexplained sounds in a watertight compartment area where a man was crushed by the door coming down. And it was a very like, oh, what is this? And they're showing the big old box tape recorder and how they captured it. And that was, I think, the first reference. But again, it didn't like pop up in popular culture till 20 years later, as far as people knowing what that even means. And I know in the paranormal community, it was, you know, starting to flow and people were like, oh, this is interesting. So how for you, again, prior to most ghost shows existing or this being a word that's said on Travel Channel 800 times a day, how did you even know of this concept? I understand you were taping and you would recognize some strange sounds, but what was it for you that you didn't just write that off as, well, you know, we got a weird signal in from that shitty radio station that's down the road. And you assumed maybe this is something more ghostly going on.
Well, because what I heard was an actual voice, and it wasn't myself or it wasn't my brother, and we were the only ones recording at the time. So, you know, I heard a female's voice, which was odd to me. So, you know, I mean, like I said, I didn't pay much attention to it then. I heard it, and it kind of creeped me out, and I think I probably recorded over it because I didn't want to hear it anymore. But, you know, that's kind of was the first equipment that I really used was an old recorder, you know. I still have an old one that I use now to investigate.
Sure.
Just as you never know what you're going to get, what you might need to use.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the older stuff, and I don't do much investigating, but sometimes the older stuff really does, you know, I have many people I talk to that don't even touch remotely new equipment. They stick with very traditional equipment, and that's all they use because they feel it gives them the best and most authentic results. It's really a matter of opinion, and I respect it all. It's just always interesting to hear that perspective. So you had a very distinct sound, a woman that came through the recording. What did you think it may be? What sort of digging did you do to try and identify that happening?
Well, like I said, at the time, since I was younger, I didn't really pay much attention to it. It kind of, you know, made me uneasy. So I just recorded over it and then didn't think about it until, you know, I was probably in my early to mid 20s. And when I was moving at one location, I came across the old, you know, recorder that I recorded with, and I started playing with it again, and I was still picking up, you know, different sounds and things that didn't make sense. So I just started doing it more and more.
Yeah. Were you just like letting the tape roll in a room that no one was in? Were you actively asking questions? Were you putting it in locations that you suspected may be haunted? What were you doing in your 20s when you kind of got back into that again?
I would just let it run at first because, you know, there was no techniques or anything that nobody ever discussed and exactly how to do anything. So I would just let it roll in rooms, you know, when nobody was home or and see if I heard anything, you know. And later as things got, you know, as I started thinking about it more, I started asking questions and seeing if I got responses. And then eventually I ended up getting responses. And then, you know, I started to get better equipment. So I was buying digital recorders and different things because that technology had already been out, but I wasn't thinking to use it, you know, and started trying to get different voices on the digital recorders. And man, I wish I still had some of those now because people look for those and they pay lots of money for the old 20s version digital recorders, you know, from the 1990s.
Mm-hmm. So when you were getting those pieces of evidence that you were starting to find when you're just kind of playing around with it, where were you getting these sounds from? Where, like, what sort of locations were you at? Was it just in your house?
Well, I first started just in the apartment that I lived in, you know, and then I started getting a little more brave and I would go out to, you know, cemeteries and different things and start to ask questions. And I always tried to be very respectful because I think now sometimes, you know, people, when you're in a cemetery, you have to be very respectful, you know? Mm-hmm. But I didn't have much luck in cemeteries, you know?
Sure.
But then as things went on and I had, you know, different friends and people, coworkers and different things that were like, oh, you know, we'd always talk about creepy things that happened in our houses and different things. And so then I started expanding out and, you know, starting investigating their houses and apartments. And, you know, it really started to kick off then, you know, because more and more people wanted me to come and do things at their house.
Sure. So when you were getting these pieces of evidence in your apartment initially, and you were hearing these things coming through the tape recorder, besides that, were you having any experiences in the apartment yourself with just unasked for, or when you weren't investigating, just going about your everyday life? Like, what the hell is that in the corner? I don't have a cat, you know, that right. sort of thing.
Yeah, well, those things have always, you know, the elusive shadow man or shadow figure, you know, I think that's always happened, where I'd see something move out of the corner of my eye and you'd look and nothing was there. And, you know, you would get the periodic, you know, your keys missing. Where'd my keys go? I always put them here, you know, and then the next thing you know, they'd show up right where they were when you were just looking for them, you know, mm-hmm. those kinds of things would happen. You know, I don't know why it is. It seems like when I was younger, I would have a lot more experiences. Now I have to really, really look for them. And I know that that's one of the things that people say is, as you're younger, you're more acceptable to accept these, you know, spirit communication and stuff. And it's much harder for me now to find it. You know, that's what we work with, psychics and mediums and sensitive people to help us. And, use all of our equipment. So I need those tools now. I wish that I would had that ability as some of those people do.
Sure. And that's an interesting thing. And obviously we hear that quite a bit, where people say just naturally younger people are more sensitive to the other side or more accepting. It's an interesting concept, because sometimes those of us who are interested in this are probably some of the most accepting in the world to it and would right. love to have the experiences. But I don't know that accepting is the right term to use for that. I battle with that, because I think it's more of it's like saying I'm more accepting of seeing without glasses. It's like, well, you can be as accepting as you want to see that stop sign or read that small print all you want. But it doesn't matter how accepting you are, you still need the damn glasses. I always view that as kind of an ability, if you will. And I think some of us, just as sight will deteriorate with age or hearing will deteriorate with age, I think that can as well. What's interesting about that that sense, if you will, because I fully believe it is a sense that we really just have never put a true word for other than sixth sense or something of that nature to it, is that with some people, that can sometimes improve with age right. as a sense. Maybe it falls more into the skill category, where you could get better at golf with age or some sort of thing that you are actively working to improve upon as you may be able to do. But with some it works, and with some, the more you try and improve upon it, you know, it's just going to fade no matter what. Right. It's an interesting thing, and I don't think we're ever truly going to have an answer for it, because I think it probably varies quite a bit from individual to individual. Do you believe, even though you feel that this has gone down in terms of sensitivity with age, that you are more sensitive to things than others, or more empathic to things than others, or at least were at one time?
No, I wish that I was. I think that just the experiences that I've had since I have been investigating, I think that helps you kind of have a little better communication with spirits, because you've done it so much that, you know, you kind of get a feeling for what to ask and, you know, where to go with the conversation if you're getting any type of indication that you're actually communicating with the spirit. Mm-hmm. So I think that experience helps. But I some locations I've been to multiple times, so I don't know if maybe a spirit that's in that location is more comfortable with me. So, you know, but I don't really think that I'm not sensitive to anything. And I think it's just, you know, as you get older, you prioritize things differently, at least in your 20s. Sure. You know, everything's completely different. So I think that, you know, once you prioritize things differently, you lose that ability to be able to sense certain things, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think people that, you know, maybe stay focused on it or meditate or do those types of different things to, you know, to train their mind in that type of thinking, I think that they're able to continue with it and develop it, which I'm not a patient person at all. So it's, I think I lost it.
I love the concept of meditating. I don't think my mind, I've tried it. I never really quite get anywhere with it, where it's like, my mind's just like, I'll sit there like, who's my next guest going to be? What questions do I want to ask? It's like, shut up. Okay. I need to focus on nothing. And, or what, I don't know that I'm capable of doing it well without at least someone who knows how to guide me correctly. Because the apps sure as hell aren't doing it. Let me ask you this. When you first started, you know, going to friends' houses and you were taking this a little more seriously in your 20s, it was kind of redeveloping as an interest. When you were investigating bringing that recorder, did you have an ultimate goal other than just to try and capture something and prove that, hey, or at least to yourself and to your friends that, yeah, there is something going on here? What was your mindset going in to identify these things?
Yeah, well, I think the my mindset was basically because talking with the friends, they would always be like, oh, well, I hear this, or, you know, so-and-so passed away in my house. And, you know, they were kind of scared and wanted to know if, you know, their house was haunted. So that's the reason that I would go, and I would try to just capture that evidence, or, you know, for their peace of mind. And say, you know, hey, you are right. It is your aunt or, you know, whoever it might be, and kind of put their mind at ease a little bit.
Did it ever put anyone's mind at ease, though? I guess, you know, you have someone come into your house like, I think this might be haunted. Let's bring somebody in. And they come in and go, yeah, your house is haunted. Does that put one's mind at ease, or does that just confirm fears?
Well, I think, you know, it depends on the person. I mean, for me, it would put my mind at ease. I think if the person is scared of this, you know, scared of spirits and things, that, you know, it's probably hard to put their mind at ease. But to me, I mean, I go into any investigation and think that, you know, I'm going to debunk this. You know, this house isn't haunted, or, you know, and I always need that next investigation and evidence to give me the proof, like, oh yeah, we got to go to another place now because we just captured this, you know. And that's kind of like what drives me, is the evidence and trying to put closure or find information for the client, whoever, you know, wants to know what's going on a property.
Does the peace come more so by identifying what it is that's causing it, mainly like who may be causing it, or if it's some sort of residual, being able to tell them that, or is it coming with you saying, you're not crazy, we got something too?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, if you look at a lot of the TV shows now, with so much being demonic or spirits or evil spirits, evil entities, however you want to label it, I think a lot of people automatically jump to like, oh, we have a malevolent spirit, you know, attacking us in our house. And, you know, one way I've always explained it, if you're a grumpy person in life, you're probably going to be a grumpy person in afterlife. So it might not be an evil spirit. You might just have a grumpy old guy that's mad that you're sitting on his couch or in his living room or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I fully subscribe to that, too. Somebody years ago when we started our program termed the phrase ass soul, where it was just like, well, they were an asshole in life and they're an ass soul in death. And I think that's very true. I think that's something that people overlook quite often when it comes to paranormal experiences or hauntings, is it's so easy to jump to, this is demonic because it scared me. It's like, well, they may not even have the intent to scare you. They may not even have realized that you saw them or could sense them. They're just going about their business. Yeah, it's probably going to scare you. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's evil. But I understand how people do jump to that, especially the big sect of the population, half of the population essentially, that has no interest in this topic or is too scared to really watch the shows about it or look at it from a serious standpoint until something happens. And then the first thing they do is flip on one of the shows on television and go, oh, holy shit, I have a demon in my house that may eat my cat next week. And they're really scared of this happening without having much knowledge or perspective on the topic. So it is easy, I think, for a lot of the general population to jump to that conclusion. But it's important to realize that it seems who we were in life, quite often, if that is us, if this is us haunting places in death, still the same problems. It doesn't get better. So,
right.
Which should be a great poster to put up for children, when they're like, things in life will get better. Even in death, it doesn't get better. You know, drink milk or something. Be a great motivational thing. That wraps up part one of our interview with Bill Cook about investigating the dead. In part two, we'll ask what it was like going into investigating hauntings of people that Bill did not know. Did Bill ever have an experience where there, in fact, was not a haunting, but rather a very crazy but logical explanation that was not accepted by the homeowners? What kind of intelligent paranormal experiences did Bill have at the haunted Judson House? What kind of home is more likely to have a haunting than others? And where does Bill see the future of paranormal investigation 20 years from now? We'll ask all that and more in part two of our interview. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.